everyone, and welcome back to our 19th episode of the World of Heritage. My name is Stephanie, and here with me is Niloufar. We are students of the World Heritage Studies program at the Brandenburg Technical University, and we started this podcast as our study project for this semester's Queering the Narratives course organized by our lecturer, Mrs. Caitlin Williams. In each episode, we have a new guest from the BTU Heritage community, and today we're really excited to get to know Ekta Chauhan a little bit more.
Ekta is a PhD student of the field of heritage studies at the BTU, which she started in 2019. However, before that, she did her Bachelor of History at the Santo Stefanos College from the Delhi University in India. After that, she decided to study public policy and received her Master of Arts in 2017 from the National Law School of India University in Bangalore. Already, her master's thesis topic with the same name of socioeconomic benefits of heritage conservation in New Delhi was showing her interest in the field of heritage. After her study, she worked as a policy analyst in India for approximately 1.5 years before coming to Germany and starting her PhD at the BTU in spring 2019. For the last two semesters, she also worked as a graduate teaching assistant for the chair of intercultural management, and she also published a chapter on silence, others, and contestation in representing plural history in Dazir Petrovadin, Managing Historic Urban Landscapes by Europe Nostra, on presented a research paper titled Heritage Walks as a Tool for Inclusive Education. At the third International Conference on Heritage Management Education Practice organized by Ahmedabad University in India. Hello, Ekta, and thanks for being our guest today. How are you?
Thank you for having me. This is a great opportunity to connect with other peers in the community at the university. I'm doing good, as we were just talking about. I am in Delhi for some time for my field work and just really busy with field work.
All right. Thanks for the nice introduction. Let's begin with our questions. Why did you decide to study history for your undergrad and public policy for your master? And why did you change the field of studying, as history has not a lot to do with public policy, or does it?
It actually does. I think it's a misconception to say that history has nothing to do with public policy, because in public policy, essentially, I would say that we are planning for the future. And without taking an account of what has already happened in the past or having a thorough understanding of what has happened in the past, one cannot design for future. I'm actually going to, I was reading a very nice book on the same topic. Sorry if I can just, it's called The History Manifesto by Joe Ghilardi and David Armitage, where they talk about why history is important for public policymaking. To answer your first question, why did I decided to study history? It's a very personal choice. So I have grown up in a very small community, in a village community, and it was a historical village. Oh, so we had these 14th century heritage sites right outside our houses. So I have sort of grown up looking at them. That's been like part of my memory. And as a child, I was very fascinated by these monuments and how did they come about, and I could hardly find any information about them. So I think that's what made me interested in history. And when I completed my graduation, so my interest has sort of always been in contemporary uses of history, not in the theoretical part so much. That's why I switched to public policy and sort of apply my knowledge of history in policy making. And then clearly for my PhD, I decided to combine both of them, and now I'm doing heritage policy. So yes.
Thank you. And Ekta, when did you decide to get into heritage? How did you get led to this route to come to Germany for World Heritage?
I think it was during my master's that I got seriously interested in heritage studies and heritage policy, to say. Because again, growing up in Delhi, Delhi is a historic city and we have a lot of heritage, and it's almost 1,000 years old heritage. It's everyday heritage. Some of it is still in use. People actually live close to the monuments, like I did for the longest, and they're part of their everyday culture, everyday memory. But even despite that, there is not too much policy focus on using heritage for sustainable development. Heritage is seen something as like as a pastime for people, or as something that does not need too much investment. So that's why I wanted to change and I wanted to contribute to that problem. So that's why I got slowly interested in heritage policy. Why I decided to come to Germany for PhD, there were a couple of factors. First of all, heritage studies in itself is a very new field. It's a very niche field, I would say. And very few universities across the world offer like a structured program in heritage studies. Like I know for a fact that India does not have it. When I was applying, I could only come across like say 10 universities that teach in English, which is the language that I use. So that was one. BTU, of course, was a natural choice because it has one of the oldest programs in heritage. And like, it's not that old, of course, because the field of itself is new, but in that scheme of things, it is old and it has a UNESCO chair. And then second, of course, was Germany's education system, which does not have a tuition fee. So it's affordable for someone like me coming from a developing nation. And so I could actually afford it and not be under like immense loans.
So what was your master thesis exactly about and how was it structured? And what important insights did you gain from it? Because it was already a heritage related thesis, right?
Yeah. So for my master's thesis, I was looking at social and economic impact of heritage conservation. And again, my field work, my field areas were actually the same field areas that I have for my PhD thesis. These are two heritage communities or heritage precincts in New Delhi called Shahjahanabad and Nizamuddin Basti. So the field, the dissertation was concerned with direct primary field work where we had interviews and collected data, so survey data from the field to understand how we can contribute, how conservation of buildings, because it is generally looked at, as I said, it's not one of the priorities of our policymakers as of now. So through this dissertation, we wanted to highlight the social and economic benefits, both of them, of conservation in these two areas to make a case that heritage policy or investment in heritage from our policymakers needs to be prioritized. One of the major findings was that apart from the economic and financial benefits that conservation generates, like once you start reusing heritage and it starts generating job opportunities for the local people, it also has immense social effects, such as it creates a sense of community among the members, it creates a sense of belonging, so long-term social impacts as well. So that was my master's thesis.
Ekta, what is the main difference between public policy and heritage in your own words?
I would say that heritage and public policy actually are two different fields, but have quite an overlap. So public policy is more of a general field of policymaking, which might have several subfields. Like you might be doing environmental policymaking, you might be doing urban policymaking, you might be doing banking, financial, any sort of policymaking. And the master's where I did public policy was sort of teaching us general frameworks of policymaking, which can be applied anywhere in any field. And similarly, heritage, again, has several factors. Like you might be looking at heritage tourism, heritage education, heritage disaster management. It has a lot of subfield. And as I said, it's a very new and evolving field. Every day or every month, I see new topics being added to the field. But again, both of them have an overlap because especially in the field that I am working, where I'm looking to sort of harness or use heritage for more sustainable policy making and sort of position our heritage as the third pillar of sustainable development. So of course they have an overlap, but otherwise I would say theoretically they are different fields.
That is very interesting. Thanks for this description. Next, we will talk about your life in Cottbus. So, guys, stay tuned.
Let's start with the second part and our guest, Ekta. Ekta, do you live in Cottbus or in Berlin at the moment? And how did you like living and studying in Germany so far?
So I live in Cottbus, but at the moment I am in Delhi, which is my research field and my home. So right now I'm at home since December, but I'll be heading back in 2 weeks. My research trip is coming to an end. I really like living in Corvus, actually. I think it's a very student-friendly city, especially. So initially I had some adjustment issues because Delhi is very loud and crowded, being a metropolitan city, and Corvus is very nice and quiet. But I think it's a very nice student-friendly city, and it's very nice to study, actually, because it's easy to concentrate there. It's not very crowded. It's not very loud. Everything is close by, so you can just get anywhere, anytime. But yeah, now I'm actually looking forward to living in Berlin.
Did you travel in Germany a lot before the pandemic? And as a socialist, what is your favorite city so far?
So honestly, I have not got many opportunities to travel. So I arrived in summer of 2019. And I was a new student and I was new in Europe. So I didn't know too much about places. And then it was cold and I am not very well adjusted to the cold. So I didn't travel. And before we knew it, March 2020, we had the pandemic. So then till then we have been stuck. So I haven't traveled extensively, actually, which is a pity. But my favorite city, I actually really like Berlin. I think it is, though I haven't stayed, because Cottbus is so close, so I keep going and coming. I think it has a very free culture, like especially coming from a country which is not very free and right of expression is very limited. I feel Berlin sort of offers an insight into how different people can express themselves freely and still coexist very peacefully. And like, I sometimes, honestly, I get a cultural shock. I meet these people and I'm like, what? But it is very nice to meet all these new kind of people and experience. And then of course, how Berlin manages its heritage is an inspiration. Just the fact that they have put all their museums together and call it Museum Island and have some of the best museums, and how it takes its heritage very seriously, not just seriously as in it's probably not just Berlin, but Germany as a country, it's probably one of those who recognizes the mistakes they did in the past, owns up to them, and publicly apologizes for them through their architecture or through their how they approach their history. I think that's a very brave step to take as a society and as a nation. It clearly shows in the city that Berlin has become, it's a very brave city. It's not scared. It is freedom of expression. They say what they feel like. So I think that is reflected very well in Berlin.
When you decided to study PhD, did you also apply somewhere else in other universities, or what was your target destination?
So I applied to a couple of other universities in Europe, in the UK, because of course, one major problem for me was the language. So I could not apply to too many places. And I got through them, but cost was a major factor because, again, unfortunately, heritage and humanities and social sciences are not taken that seriously anywhere in the world. So there is utter lack of funding. I could not afford places like UK, even though I got through. And I got the admission. So, and that's why I chose Germany over anything else, because at the end of the day, I have to survive.
How is the application process for gaining a PhD in Germany? And was the application process hard? Did you have to submit a proposal before, or how did it work?
So again, there are two kinds of PhDs from what I understand. One is the structured PhD, which I'm doing, where the university has already structured the PhDs into semester, and then I have to attend some mandatory courses, give the exam, submit my assignments, all of that, and do my thesis. And then there are other PhDs which are like project-based PhDs, where you're attached with a project and you're working in a lab. But I guess those are more common in science. So for me, the application process honestly wasn't that difficult, because BTU has a very well-managed admission department and a very good web page where you can get all the information. So I had to submit my proposal, which ran into 8 to 10 pages. Once I submitted that, the admissions office got in contact with me and gave me a few choices for my supervisor from which I could choose. And then I went ahead with that. So the documents that I had to submit was a research proposal, like an indicative one, which basically had in the last 2 years have changed 10 times, but I had submitted something 2 years back, and a statement of purpose highlighting why I want to do the PhD, etc. And then all my mark sheets and the general administrative documents. So I wouldn't say it was very hard. It took around 4 months to complete the whole process, 4 to 5 months to complete the process. And then I had to start with my visa process. But yeah, it was actually extremely, I think, very, very well organized. And even like I wrote continuous emails with my questions and my queries and always got a reply back.
As you mentioned, the cost and salary is always a problem for PhD students in the humanity sector section. How about World Heritage? Many students are curious to know how PhD students manage it. And isn't it considered as a full-time job, like from governmental point of view? How does it work with residency after graduation?
For the structured PhD that I'm doing, I'm not considered employed. I'm formally a student of BTU. So I pay my semester fee like everybody else. And I pay for my expenses like everybody else. Again, like for the PhDs who are attached with the project, I know a few friends, but not in the heritage department, who are attached with the project. So they are registered as employees and not students. So they get paid, they're employees of BTU. Couple of things here. So when I started, I did not have any funding. I was fortunate enough to have some savings and some family support to start, to just like sort of take this leap of faith. And I was like, okay, we'll see how it goes from there. So I just arrived in Germany with some savings, but I have been fortunate that of the four semesters, I have worked for 3 semesters. Just 1 semester, I didn't have any work. So I always had a research assistant or a teaching assistant job, which is a part-time job, and it helped me survive. I also got some short-term grants from the university, which again were helpful. And now I have got, fortunately, a long-term support from the university for this year till the end of 2021. So finally, after like 1 or 2 years of hardships and financial hardships, I have some support for 1 year. So that's how it's working out. One advice that I would like to give any PhD students, which I think I made a huge mistake, do not leap into a PhD without funding. Always first secure your scholarship. You can always get like a tentative admission letter from the university and apply for your scholarships first. Again, BTU website has a list of scholarships available to the PhD candidates on their webpage. So first secure your scholarship and then only start your PhD, I think, because that would make much more sense. I think I was young and stupid, but I had some support from my parents, so it wasn't that hard, but I would highly recommend that do not start your PhD till you have funding.
Thank you so much for your advice. All right, let's take a short pause. Let's take a short break. And we will come back with the next session talking about your program. Thank you so much. Stay tuned.
Ekta, doing your PhD at the BTU, with which professors were you mainly working with? And which courses were you teaching? Are you going to teach more courses this summer semester?
So I'm working with Miriam. This semester I'll be teaching a course on globalization and culture for second and third semester master's students of World Heritage Studies. And last summer also I taught the same course with Miriam, and it's actually a very great collaboration. And I love working with her, so I would be doing the same. Last semester I was teaching Introduction to World Heritage Studies, which was a course for first semester students. So that's for my work. But for my PhD, my supervisor is Professor John Schleckenbach. And my second supervisor is Professor Anna Emelina. So I work very closely with them as well.
Can you please tell us more about your dissertation topic and your focus on the PhD? Furthermore, at what stage are you at the moment in your research?
All right, so I'm looking at role of communities in managing heritage tourism in New Delhi, and I've taken 2 case study areas from here. So as I said, within heritage, you have a lot of other subgroups. So I'm particularly looking at heritage and cultural tourism, and then understanding how we can involve local communities or local residents, to be more specific, better in their management of local sites and local tourism. Because as recent literature and recent policy debates have sort of indicated, there is a need to move towards more democratic decision-making. It cannot be just some people at the head of the administration taking the decision, and local communities actually have very important insights and experience to offer when it comes to policy making, especially for something like heritage and lived heritage and decisions that will affect them directly. So what we are trying to understand is how we can involve them better and use their knowledge better. So I just completed my field work. It actually been a little delayed because of COVID. So because we had to take all these precautions and all of that. So I'm in my I'll be starting my fifth semester. I've just finished all my interviews. I'll be writing up the transcripts and then moving forward with my thesis writing. So I am sort of hoping to complete my PhD in 7 semesters. So I think I'm at 4th.
Since you already mentioned that you had some problems with your case study and doing the case study in Delhi because of the pandemic, did you also face some other problems during the pandemic time? What other challenges can you think about in regards to your research work that influenced you a lot?
The biggest challenge has been to keep yourself motivated, because anyways, for this structured PhD or PhD that is completely dependent on me, I work alone. So either I'm working in my room or I go to the library. So my work anyways, I would say, is very lonely, and I don't have a lab or I don't have sort of colleagues. So the only thing I had was to, you know, meet people, go out with them, go out with friends to cafes. And so that has been in sort of very lonely, to be stuck in your room and not be able to do. For someone like me who loves to travel and didn't get to travel, it has been a sort of a lot of mental health pressure, I would say. Secondly was that as PhD student, and especially somebody who had just started their PhD, it's very important for us to network through conferences and through, you know, these meetups or whatever, which have been canceled through this year. So in 2020, I actually had 3 international conferences that I had to attend, but all of them either were canceled or were on Zoom. Again, the whole purpose of these conferences is to network, because it's very important in academic field to network and know the right people. And though I could present my research, I could not network. And then third, there was also Zoom. So many problems. If I start, I'll go on. Then Zoom fatigue. Honestly, at this point, I don't take any classes on Zoom because I just can't understand. I had thought of targeted learning German on Zoom. I just cannot. Like, I just need in physical classes. So I think all of these problems have been there, and I think will go on for some while. Let's not be too hopeful about this situation. Cases are rising again.
You mentioned that it was quite lonely, your PhD. So was it easy for you to find friends then in Germany? Or did you already have friends that lived in Germany that you like connected to? Or how was that process?
So of course, I had a few friends, and we kept meeting for lunch and dinners and etc., all of those. But again, having like going for seminars or finding people in your own field, that is very important. And even with your friends, you know, like in BTU, we have such great opportunities. We had those cultural nights where you can meet people. We have a lot of other events, German like language classes, which is another great avenue for meeting people. So since all of those were canceled, I mean, everybody's social life was quite restricted and sad.
Talking about PhD and the level that German government approach to human sciences in Germany or generally all around the world, would you recommend the PhD program of World Heritage in general at the BTU?
So that's a very complex question, I would say. I mean, I am personally an idealist, but I have always been in humanities, and I realize it's not one of the most well-paying fields, and there is a lot of struggle. So But then I think, again, by this, my idealistic viewpoint of we need to change the world and we need to push knowledge further, etc., and we need to make a difference, sort of stems from my own privilege as well. I mean, I completely understand that there are people who need to meet certain financial needs and would not be able to take projects such as PhD, which do not, I would say, which promises results, but do not promise the immediate financial results that our world in the 21st century requires from a person. So while I really enjoy, and I would say that if you are up for the challenge, definitely do it, but do sort out your finances. Don't be as idealistic as me. Be a little bit practical.
Talking about your future plans, what is your plan for after the PhD? Do you want to get a professor and teach, as you mentioned that you quite like it? Or do you want to get out and be a researcher or working at a company? What do you feel like doing there?
My plans obviously keep changing, but as of now, I would want to get into teaching and research. I would not mind teaching at BTU. I think it's a great environment. Yeah, and also carry some research, because honestly, I've always been interested in research and reading and finding out. I'm always like one of those curious kids around the block. But unfortunately, my country does not offer any support or any avenues for independent research or free research. So I would want to continue my research in Germany if that is an opportunity I get.
Okay, so we hope that this works out for you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have one quite mean last question for you, which you probably don't know about, or you know if you already listened to some episodes. What is your favorite World Heritage Site and why?
My favorite World Heritage Site and why? So I would say it is Humayun's tomb in Delhi, because again, I said I'm a very emotional and idealistic person. So since it is in my city, and I always say that Delhi is my first and only love, so that would be it. But it's one of the major World Heritage Sites. It's also part of my case study for my research. It was also the case study for my master's research. Well, I would say I'm quite obsessed with that monument. So it would be Humayun's tomb in Delhi.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Ekta, for answering all our questions and giving us all this honest information about PhD and sharing your motivation and stories with us. It's been great to have you, and thank we hope you. Please.
Thank you for having me. It's always great to connect, and you guys or anybody can feel free to reach out to me. I would be very happy to help.
Yeah, such a pleasure. We hope the pandemic gets over soon, so maybe one day we can meet each other. I hope so. We wish you that all your plans and goals will turn out soon well, and you achieve all you want. And it was a great pleasure to get to know you a little bit more out of the course.
Thank you.
Thanks also to everyone listening to us and supporting us along the way. We have had the pleasure to get to see our classmates on a screen, though, but it's the best we can do, and get to know them more, and are happy to share all their stories with you guys. Thanks for the amazing feedback, and we hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we did. If you haven't done so, you should also listen to the other podcasts which we published already. For example, Raja, Anna, Liz, or Bisrat.
For the next episode, we will have a chat with Andrea. She is in her last semester now and currently back in Spain studying territorial and historical heritage. Furthermore, she has done 2 exchange semesters in Cairo and Tunisia during her master in World Heritage Studies. We are excited to learn more about this experience.
If you are also interested in sharing your thoughts and stories with us, please feel free to contact us. You can reach us on Instagram with the name The World of Heritage, or email. Thanks again for listening, and stay well. Bye.